Si tienes ciertas afecciones crónicas como
enfermedad cardíaca,
asma,
diabetes, y tienes 19 años o más,
52,
36,
42,
puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20, vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20. Si tienes ciertas afecciones crónicas como
enfermedad cardíaca,
asma,
diabetes,
y tienes 19 años o más,
52,
36,
42.
Puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20, vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20.
Conan,
you what up?
Is a fitter, happier you worth fighting for?
Want that well.
Well, getting stronger is hard work, but that doesn't mean it can't be fun. Fight Camp blurs the lines between fitness and gaming. If you are looking for one of the most exhilarating and effective forms of home fitness, then Fight Camp brings the best workout in the world into your home and makes it fun. Explore thousands of workouts led by expert trainers to meet you on your time. Live punch stats motivate you to push harder and help you map out your progress. Knock out achievements or go head-to-head against other rivals from across the country or across the living room. Learn the basics and sharpen your skills over time through tailored paths. Now, Fight Camp has thousands of classes, and with new workouts added each week, you'll always find something new. Use filters to explore different workout styles, lengths, trainers, difficulty levels, and more. You'll never get bored. It's a full-body workout that combines boxing with plyometrics. It brings both boxing and plyometrics combined into a full-body workout, bringing the best of both cardio and strength training into one, giving you an intense full-body workout. We promise you'll be sore, very sore after this. And the full package of Fight Camp comes with the gear you need to start boxing from home, including a freestanding punching bag, boxing gloves, quick hand wraps, and smart punch trackers. And it takes up less space than you think. If you have enough room to do a push-up, you have enough room for Fight Camp. So join the biggest boxing community in the world without leaving your home with Fight Camp. You can get started with Fight Camp for as low as $9 a month. Go to fightcamp.com/Conan to learn more. That's fightcamp.com/KONNAN to learn more.
Did you already get yours, Joe?
It's on the way.
Yeah. So I already got mine, and it's great because it isn't like a conventional punching bag that hangs from the roof and then you hit it and it swings around or somebody has to hold it. It's like on a base. So you can just hit the punching bag and get a real good cardio exercise in. And the great part about this is if you only got 15 minutes, you do a 15-minute workout. If you want to go up to an hour, you get an hour workout. It's great, great, great cardio. It's great for toning your body. When I was doing the best shape I've ever been in my life, besides when I was in the military, and we didn't do any weights, was when I did training for UFC. And it was just mostly like ropes and, you know, hitting the punching bag. And, you know, like you can still get really good muscular development and tone and especially conditioning just from hitting that punching bag. And this is absolutely great. You can put it in your house, in your garage, and that way you don't have to go to the gym, pay gym fees, park, you know. You know what I'm saying? It's very, very convenient. I highly recommend it. Yeah.
Like Disco mentioned earlier, there's live training videos. You can filter it out and search for which type of workout you want to do if you're not sure, if you're inexperienced. Another cool thing is it'll keep all your records so you can compete against yourself. You can compete against friends who have it. You can compete against your family at home. And a lot of people do that stuff. Keep track of your stats. Keep track of your progress.
I'm sure Disco will be getting his soon, and he's really big into conditioning, so he's going to love it. He, you know, it might be something to break at the monotony of always doing the stationary bike or instead of, but I highly recommend this. Everything that we promote on this show, we use ourselves. So get fit, get in shape, get conditioned, fightcamp.com/Conan. Boom.
Orgullosamente Latino hasta la muerte y después. Worldwide Latino Pride, the ambassadors of violence. LAX, K-Dog, the notorious 187 homicide.
Bang, bang,
bang,
bang, bang.
Don't say nothing.
Bang, 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 bang.
We be thumping.
Bang, 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 bang.
Just act like you know and homie, stop fucking.
Welcome to Stompin'. I'm from Miami, not Compton. Down with the S's and the 6-4 hopping. To my Boricuas in the 787. And those up in Brooklyn pulling 211.
I come through stomping, rolling in my low top chucks. Making sure you suckers feel me every time we bust. Checkered up like a nut going 5150. G'd up in the feet up, creased up in some dickies.
I rap a lot, like the label out of Houston. Sneaky like the clock up in the shop, straight boosting. To all my hand it down in Juarez.
Are you really? Yeah, I'm going to be down here. I don't know. Originally was going to come down here till the end of December, but I'm thinking about hanging around for a little longer. So just winging it.
Do you see any of the boys down there?
You know, just Hulk.
Right.
Yeah, not too many other guys.
I saw the Nasty Boys this past
week. I'm sorry.
I'll tell you what. They're aging well. They look as young as they did back in the
they
day.
They didn't look that young back then, so I don't know if that's what I'm saying.
They look
or not.
Oh man.
Let's start right off the bat, Eric. What can you say or what can you talk about or anything? Because it almost seems like you got over to WWE. And you almost didn't even get out of the starting gate there. What went down there?
You know, I've talked about this before, and I really mean this. I know it's going to sound like I'm being evasive or I don't want to talk about it. And that's not really the case. It's just chemistry, man. WWE is a phenomenal company. They really are. No matter what you think of the in-ring product from time to time, if you look at them as a business and what they've accomplished, it just... It's nothing short of amazing. It still amazes me just sitting here thinking about it, you know, in this conversation. But they got there because of a formula, because of a process, and it worked very, very well for them. I don't think I fit into that process or that formula. My way of looking at the business is different. My approach to creative is probably significantly different, and I just don't think it was a good fit.
Could you give me one example that you could discuss where there was just a major philosophical creative difference where you were like, bro, this ain't going to work. I can't work like this, or this is not the way I work, or something like that?
It never really got to that, you know, and I can't really discuss too much internal stuff in the process. Yep. I signed an NDA, so there's, you know, I have to be very, very general about the way I discuss this thing. There was a moment or two, I guess, while I was there the first couple months. I think the first month and a half in particular, where I went home and I told, you know, my wife Lori, you know, do not fall in love. Do not fall in love with the furniture. Do not fall in love with anything you buy here. You know, we came here, you know, in a 5x8 U-Haul trailer. We're going to leave here in a 5x8 U-Haul trailer. And we may be leaving sooner than you think. That idea, you know, that thought crossed my mind early on. And I was right.
Let me ask you a question. What's your thought process like as you're leaving Wyoming and you're driving across the country? Are you feeling like, I mean, I'm sure that had to be difficult because, like, bro, going from Wyoming back east, torture for anybody, I can imagine. But, like, what were the second thoughts like as you're making that journey?
You know, I didn't have any. I was really excited about the opportunity. It was a very, very, it was a great opportunity. It was a great job. It was a great opportunity. It was, you know, as I said, WWE is a phenomenal company. So I was very optimistic. You know, there were certain things I knew I was going to miss. I knew, you know, growing up, obviously I grew up in Detroit and Minneapolis and Pittsburgh and Chicago. So it's not like I haven't lived in a city before. But I've gotten really accustomed to having a lot of space around me. I love the mountains. I love to be able to hunt, fish, and ride horses and do all kinds of things outdoors. And I knew I'd be giving a lot of that up, if not all of it. But I was okay with it. You know, I wasn't, you know, I didn't miss it. I didn't have second thoughts about it. I knew that I was taking on a challenge. I knew, you know, it wasn't going to be for long. In a best case scenario, I didn't see myself staying at WWE for more than 2 or 3 years, tops. That was kind of the plan. And I figured, you know, for 2 or 3 years, if I can do something substantive, you know, something meaningful and leave the industry on a high note, that is a hell of an opportunity. And I was willing to sacrifice kind of the short-term things that I enjoy for a little bit more of a long-term gain.
I have two quick questions and we'll leave WWE alone, but I am interested in hearing your answer to this. Is Eric, when you were there, what were the major differences that you had seen, for good or bad, that the business had changed, you were in there internally, between when you were in WCW and WWE?
You know, Conan, I don't think the business has really changed all that much. It still is about two people, four people, whatever, however many people in the ring. It's the action, it's the storytelling, it's the characters, it's the emotion that you can create in the ring. That's never going to change. Now, the presentation may evolve, as it has, I think, over the last, particularly the last 5 or 10 years. And Conan, you were a big part of that. You know, it probably goes back 20 years when you brought, you know, Lucha Libre into WCW, and I give you full credit for, you know, bringing the luchadors in and establishing, you know, that lucha style on such a large platform, you know, in the United States. That was the beginning, I think, of the evolution of the business. And people started expecting more athleticism, more dynamic, you know, performances in the ring. And, you know, the big man stuff had kind of faded away in terms of the audience's appeal to it. And it's
how long did it take you to understand that, Eric, for you to actually grasp that? Because at the beginning, it had to be very foreign to you because you didn't grow up around that.
Yes and no, Conan. I mean, there was a reason I brought, you know, the cruiserweight. There is a reason I established the cruiserweights, you know, before, you know, bringing you in and the luchadors in, because I knew a faster pace. And again, it goes back to Japan and so much of the stuff that I was seeing in Japan that I personally really enjoyed. I enjoyed a much more physical, dynamic presentation than the kind of cartoonish wrestling that was, you know, dominant in the 80s and 90s. So I established the cruiserweights to have something in the ring that was different than, you know, a lot of the bigger guys and the way that they worked. But where you're right in terms of me not really fully appreciating it, I don't think I really started to appreciate the significance of what Lucha brought to the product in general, not just the luchadors themselves, but their influence on what we see now in the ring is undeniable.
Every day, we rise, challenging ourselves to work for what we believe in. At U.S. Border Patrol, protecting our borders is more than a job. It's a calling. Agents answer the call, working together to keep our country and communities safe. If you are ready for a new mission, join U.S. Border Patrol and go beyond. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.
Freedom is all about choices, and while there is only one Jeep brand, you have the freedom to choose from an epic lineup of Jeep brand vehicles. Hit the trails with the versatile classic, the Jeep Gladiator, or experience the wild in style with the sophistication and comfort of the Jeep Grand Cherokee or Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe. Looking for a more immersive experience? Let nature come to you in the open-air Jeep Wrangler or Jeep Wrangler 4xe, America's best-selling plug-in hybrid. Whatever you choose, adventure is just one drive away. Visit Jeep.com for details. Based on 2022 CYQ4 sales, JD Power retail sales data, Jeep is a registered trademark.
Are you struggling to lose weight and keep it off? Tired of wasting time and money on starvation diets that lead to more frustration and stress? If there was a weight loss solution that could actually work for you, would you try it? Then head to Golo.com.
I'm Steve. I lost 138 pounds in 9 months on Golo.
I'm Amber. I've lost 128 pounds with Golo Taking Release.
If you're ready to take back control of your life, head to Golo.com now and see how Golo can work for you. That's Golo.com.
My sleep is way better. My inflammation has gone way down. Golo saved my life. I was way overweight. That's what sent me down the path. I wanted to make sure and live for my kid.
I have literally tried everything. I was on the verge of getting gastric bypass surgery, and I saw the Golo commercial, and it was the last thing I tried because it worked.
Join over 2 million people who have found a better way to lose weight with Golo. Your healthier and happier life begins at golo.com. That's golo.com. Again, golo.com.
I don't think I recognize that fully until probably the last couple of years, because now I'm not in it. You know, yeah, when you're in it and it's all right there in front of you and you go from this show to this show to this show to this show, it's all just, you don't really have time to appreciate or understand or analyze it. Really now, especially, you know, with doing this podcast and going back and watching shows, and where I can go back and really see, I can watch a show from 1995 and see the presentation there. And then maybe the next week, you know, Conrad and I will be talking about, you know, a pay-per-view from 1998 or 1997. Well, there's night and day difference between, not across the boards, but for the most part, there's a night and day difference between the product that you were watching in 97 and 98 and the product you were watching in 94 and 95. And I don't think I really appreciated that until recently.
Now, at the beginning of your, when you were start talking about WWE, you threw this little caveat where you said, regardless of what you may think about their in-ring product, which I don't think is that good right now. Do you think, Eric, it's more when you talk to Vince McMahon, are we talking about a 70-year-old man that, you know, it's very hard to know, to have your pulse on pop culture, what's the best music right now, what's the best, what's really hot right now? Or is, do you think it's more because the company's so big and it has so much programming, it's hard to have great storylines across so many shows, you know what I'm saying?
I think it's the latter. Look, you know, while Vince McMahon and I may see things completely differently creatively, I won't say completely, but close to completely differently when it comes to creative and storytelling, there's no, look, Vince, while he may not have his finger on pop culture, there's a lot of people in WWE that do. And he listens to them and he allows them to kind of pick up the slack as the case need be. But I think the overall situation with WWE is because they've gotten so big. Television is such a central part of their business model, and that television has changed. You can't do the types of things that even we did, Conan, in disco and WCW, yeah, in 95 and 96, 97, 98, even 99. You can't do that anymore. Television has changed. Culture has changed. And I think if you're going to cater to the television industry, which they have to do because of the way their business is structured, and television is going to be reactive to the culture in general, and I'm not just saying the PC culture, but when it comes to violence, when it comes to some of the things that we did, you know, back in the 90s, you couldn't do those things today. And that tends to sterilize or sanitize the presentation quite a bit. And I think that's the biggest challenge. They've become, you know, I don't want to say a victim of their own success. I guess that wouldn't be the right way to say it. They're a $5 billion company. I wish I was a victim of that. But at the same time, I think, you know, one of the reasons that we're not seeing a completely different presentation isn't because Vince doesn't have his finger on the pulse. It's because the industry won't tolerate it.
I give you, you just basically gave an answer to a question I wanted to ask you. But to extrapolate this further, it's like you're talking about like things you can't do today because of the PC, the outrage culture. It used to be, what was it like back in WCW? You would have to get phone call from people complaining. Like they would literally have to phone in and complain to Turner and stuff, to have their voice, like to realize that we were doing something that was going overboard. With social media these days, it's like, bro, all the complainers are free to just voice their opinions all the time. And it's like they have more things to complain about. It's like you get, and this, like you said, they're putting a blanket over a lot of things that we would like to try in professional wrestling that are proven formulas for success. And it's like with the violence and the sex appeal and stuff that you're not being allowed to do that anymore because the feedback you get. Do you agree with that?
I agree. I mean, social media has affected everything that we do in our lives, and particularly in business. The professional victim culture that I think has manifest because of social media, where everybody needs to be outraged about something. Everybody needs to be offended. Everybody needs to feel like they're a victim of something, or they're speaking for the victims of something.
You know what's the worst part? Eric, I'm sorry for interrupting you. Here's the worst part. We are now mining the past, looking for shit to be outraged about. That's even worse.
It is. It's mind-boggling how negative people feel the need to be on a constant basis. And again, I think it comes down to, you know, people trying to get attention. They want to send out a tweet or a message in social media somehow in some way that gets a lot of attention and gets a lot of likes and makes them feel valuable. It's a weird world that we live in, to be sure. And I think wrestling is affected just like every other form of entertainment is affected.
I think it's handcuffed is the better word, because it's like you said that, like, you know, bro, what would people like think about, like, if we tried to put the Nitro Girls on TV each week, where a group of dancing girls, and that was their job on the show. Imagine what fans would be saying today if we were trying to do that. Be like, oh, you're just objectifying women. And it's true. Like, you know, right. That's true. That's what people would say. It's like, okay, we can't do that,
bro. Here's what's
think of all these other things you want to try and do with regards to violence, and it's like you're just sitting there saying, wow, the people just gonna complain about that and complain about that. It's like my question is what is the future of professional wrestling in an outraging PC culture? Because it's like we're talking about bad storylines, and storylines haven't been good over the years and stuff. And it's like, yeah, you want to try and push the envelope now. Back in the day, like, you know, with the NWO and the Attitude Era, it's like, and that envelope's not there to push now. It's like you literally can't push that envelope. You have to try things within the PC culture to do on the show. And it's like, I don't know if those elements will draw an audience, like a PC version of professional wrestling. That's, I think, a problem right now.
I think it will evolve, though, Disco. It's going to require that the people that produce the product look at things differently. You know, you can't, you have to look at the storytelling component. You know, and this is one thing that I was, you know, I was disappointed because I went to WWE and I've had this idea in my head now for about 2 years, really, that there is a formula. There is a method in creating a storyline that I think would make the stories and the characters so much more compelling than the kind of paint by numbers presentation that we see today. But it requires embracing a different way of looking at the business. You know, look, there's great movies. There's great, I mean, you watch, you know, HBO or you watch Netflix. I mean, there's just amazing storytellers out there. But I think that the industry at some point, if it's going to survive, and it will, at some point, people are going to have to look at the way they tell their stories and the formulas that they use for telling those stories and realize that they're outdated. The storytelling process right now, and I'm talking about in general, I'm not talking about WWE, and I'm being very vague intentionally to stay within the four corners of my non-disclosure agreement. But the way stories are being told now are essentially the same way that they were being told 20 years ago, 30 years ago, without the advantage or without the benefit of being able to reach in your back pocket and pull out something crazy every once in a while to get people talking or to shock the audience or to surprise the audience or to get the audience buzzing the very next day. There's very few of those elements out there.
Yeah.
And it's not just because of the PC culture. It's because the storytelling is so fundamentally just bland. You know, you look at it, you know, look at a top babyface today. None of them are vulnerable. None of them have a weakness. The only way you can take down a top babyface is to have two or three guys get on him or two or three women get on her. You know what I mean? There's no, and then look at Marvel. Look at the huge success of the Marvel franchise and look at some of their characters. Their heroes have flaws, and those flaws are weaknesses that they have to overcome. So the battle is not only the person you're in the ring with, the battle is within yourself at a certain point.
So
those are the types of, I think, more complex stories and character development that'll probably, you know, you'll start seeing in a year or two or 3 years when people keep trying the same thing over and over again. It's not working. I mean,
well, you've evolved from your thinking, because I remember back when we would sit at booking meetings, you know, back in 20 years ago, your philosophy was bright colors and broad strokes, simplistic, you know, and stuff. And have you now, we're fast forward 20 years in all TV, and now you've evolved from that thinking, and like we need to be more complex and stuff.
You can be more. I still believe it. The quote, you're right, Disco. I used to say, paint your pictures with broad strokes and bright fluorescent colors. Mm-hmm. So the image, so the story and the characters and the emotion that you're creating is vivid enough to the audience that they react to it. And that doesn't mean, though, that you can't tell a complex story in broad strokes and bright colors. It's just that you have to get your characters differently than you looked at them 20 years ago. I still believe in broad strokes and bright colors. I just think that the picture you're painting with those broad strokes and bright colors need to be more interesting than they currently are.
Well, it's like we painted so many pictures over the, you know, bro, you're talking about, was it 11 to 12 hours of TV every week over the course of 25 years? It's like, you know, it's like, I mean, it's like you've almost exhausted all of the storylines. But so what you have to do is now you develop new characters with new flaws about themselves and stuff, and new character traits that people have and stuff. And that's where I think we're missing, because, like, I think a lot of the wrestlers today don't feel comfortable embracing the characters that they're given. And we don't really see anything out of them except the basics and stuff. Do you agree with that?
I agree that a lot of talent doesn't really understand their characters deeply enough. You know, they don't believe in the characters. They don't become the characters. And you look at some of the most successful characters in the industry, you know. Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know, was successful because he was playing a louder, larger than life version of himself. That was an easy character for Steve to excel at because he wasn't acting, and it became something that the audience really, really gravitated to. Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, Ricky Steamboat,
Macho Man,
Macho Man.
Yeah.
These are all characters. You know, the talent, the individuals became the characters, and they believed in those characters. Where I think today, what I see with there's exceptions to the rule. Believe me, Randy Orton is probably, for the last 15 or 20 years, been one of my favorite performers. Still is to this day. He keeps getting better every time he goes out. It's an amazing character, an amazing talent. There are still characters out there that are strong characters that know who they are, but so many of them are just, you know, their idea of a character is, you know, what wardrobe am I wearing today? You know, what color of outfit, what's my ring gear look like? That's the extent of their character.
Right. And one of the biggest problems that we're having is they're bringing so many people before their time to the major leagues. Like, you know, back in the day, like you look around the dressing room and this guy had spent 10 years in a territory. That guy had spent 10 years in, you know what I'm saying? And you got the best and you brought him. And now you have all these young cats that they really don't know what they're doing. And they're more, you know, like they don't even know how to work the crowd. They're so busy trying to remember what's next in the match that they forget one of the most important components is working the crowd. You know what I'm saying? Another thing that you see nowadays, Eric, is that everybody throws forearm, nobody throws punches. You don't see real fights anymore. All the fights look really weak. You know what I'm saying? And we've been, and some of the instruments are at our disposal to get heat, like blading, have been taken away from us. You know what I'm saying?
I agree with that. You know, I don't think it's, you know, I've never been a big fan of blading. Look, occasionally in the right match, in the right situation, it had some added value to the drama. But, you know, blading just for the sake of blading and trying to get heat if you don't have any heat already, it's not really getting the job done. But I think we all agree overall, you know, to your point, Conan, this goes back to what I was saying about becoming a victim of your own success. You know, when you're producing, what's WWE producing now? They got 2 hours or 3 hours on Monday night, 2 hours on SmackDown. What are they doing? 2 hours on NXT, I guess. That's a lot of television.
Yeah, and dinner by three and driving in a car and all that other shit they do. Yeah.
You've got to, it takes a lot of talent to keep that. You got to feed that monster. Right. And the way they're feeding that monster, they're taking the guys and girls out of the performance center. And guess what? They're all trained the WWE way. They're all trained according to WWE philosophy. They all coming through what is ultimately a Vince McMahon filter. So it's not surprising, and I don't think it should be surprising, nor is it a bad thing necessarily for WWE, that so many of those people that come through that process and through that filter have a sameness about them. There's very little diversity in what we see in the ring. And I'm not talking about racial diversity or males and females, but I mean,
it's a factory.
It's a factory.
Factory part of the factory. You know, it's right.
Let me ask you a question, because I think this is a generational thing, 1,000%. Eric, do you think that our generation was less sensitive, or do you think this generation is too sensitive? And how do you walk that tricky tightrope when you've got a, when you know you're putting something on Twitter, you're saying something on your podcast that may be inflammatory to others, or may even get, might cost you a job?
It's tricky now. I mean, there's certain things I won't talk about on my podcast because I know it's going to affect my bottom line. You know, I think we're probably financially one of the more successful podcasts out there, according to Conrad. And the only way we're going to be able to maintain that is to, you know, we know where that line is. And, you know, I drop F-bombs all the time. That's no big deal. We talk about things. But, you know, I don't go near politics. I don't. I just don't. Not because I'm not a political person, but because it divides your audience in half automatically. And then people start getting outraged. And before you know it, your advertisers are finding out about it and they're reading hate mail. And, you know, it ends up costing you money. And to answer your question, is it because people are far more sensitive now, or we were far too unsensitive or insensitive?
Yeah, less sensitive.
I think today's culture is being trained and conditioned to be super sensitive. They just are. Right. We live in an outrage culture and in a victimhood culture.
Like they're coming after comedy. My whole thing with professional wrestling, comedy is they're attacking comedy, trying to cancel comedy if the jokes aren't PC. And then the next thing that people are going to come after, I'm calling this right now, is violent and even simulated violent. You know, there's just plenty of things that wrestling has now that people can complain about that they haven't started complaining about yet. And you just see the way the people are trained, the way we're educated, just we're trained to just be outraged.
And it's so weird because I'll give you an example that yesterday Disco retweeted something about some lady that she sat down with some guy at a date, and 4 minutes in, he was talking about some conservative
Candace Owens. She mentioned Candace Owens, and the girl tweeted, "Date over, block the guy's phone." Just by bringing him, like, the guy brought me. Hey, I like Candace Owens. She sounds like she knows what she's talking
about. And then, so, like, for example, I was watching this interview. I don't know if you remember this. It was very revelatory. It was an interview. Remember back in the day, Eric, did you used to watch MTV in the embryonic stages, like when Mark Goodman was a VJ and all that? Do you remember those guys or no?
Sure.
Okay. So it was Mark Goodman in the 80s sitting down with David Bowie. And David Bowie's asking him, "Why don't you have more black artists on your show?" And he's like, "Well, we don't know if that's going to work in Midtown America." He goes, "I know who it'll work for, a black kid who likes black music, or a person that likes black music." And then he goes, "Let me tell you what I don't like about..." And then Mark Goodman told him, "Here's a problem we're having." He says, "What I don't like is when somebody hears that I like a certain music and they don't like me because of that." And I was almost thinking to myself, listen to this in 2020. That was already masticizing in the 80s until it is where it is now. You know what I'm saying? And I think it picked up steam in that, like, this has been going on for a little while already. And now is when it's actually kind of exploded. Do you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
No, it makes sense. You know, and I think it's been going on throughout our culture. You know, I mean, you go back to the 50s and early 60s when Elvis Presley, you know, parents wouldn't let their kids go see Elvis Presley because they thought he was vulgar and he was singing, you know, what they considered to be black music.
Stimulating sex, too. Yeah. Like through the thrust, you know?
I mean, it's just, but now I think with social media, it's exacerbated it. Now,
right.
And instead of, you know, it, something taking its natural course in the public's eye and kind of dying a slow death, now because of social media, you can have millions of people jumping on a victim cause and creating a bunch of noise that, you know, 10 years ago you couldn't do.
Right, because before it was just like you only saw it in the people that were around you, right?
Right.
So, like, I remember when I was in the military, there was, like, these guys that they just listened to, like, heavy metal music. They hated rap. All the rap guys hated all the rock guys. And it's like you were separated. You know what I'm saying? And it's just incredible to me how back then you would only see it, like, on my ship, right? Now, when you're on social media, it's out there exponentially. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, Conan, go back to the No Limit Soldiers and the rap is crap, you know, angle we did. You know, I mean, you couldn't pull that off today.
Yeah, that was very divisive. Yeah,
that you. Okay. I don't think it was at all. I mean, by the way,
it was. I think it was.
We would laugh at it because it was funny. Rap is crap. They get a bunch of rednecks.
There were a lot of rednecks that didn't like that But they were like,
you know, today what would happen? You do that, and it's just inflamed. Oh, these are racist and stuff. And like, wait a second, this is not, I just thought this is funny. You know, like I'm not gonna. The thing is, like, we're having to apologize for things that we thought were just basic general humor back in the day. And it's like people are looking back at what the things that we thought was funny and think that we're bad people for thinking it was funny. It's like, guys, it's just, we're not bad people. It's just like there's this, the culture changed over the course of the past 20 years. And the culture that we lived in was a little bit raw. We lived in an era of sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Now we live in an era where people tell you words hurt. And that's just that's basically the gist of the society we live in. It's just like that's changed. But that doesn't make us any like bad people that we rubber stamped that stuff back in the day. You know, it's like it was funny, you know?
By the way, Conan, I had breakfast with Master P about 3 weeks ago in New York.
He's a very successful guy.
He's still doing really well.
Yeah. How did you guys connect after all these years? Like, you guys had lunch.
He reached out.
You reached out? Nice.
Yeah.
That's funny. That's okay. You looking
isn't he promoting now, like House of Glory or something like that in New York? Or it's he's a half owner or something like that, I read?
Yeah, he's got a financial interest in it. Don't know many details, but it was just really, we were just hanging out socially. It was just a get together. And he gave me a call after he read that I was no longer in WWE and said, hey, you know, next time you're in LA or
how cool is that, right?
Huh?
How cool is that?
No, it's great. And he's a super guy, very smart, very successful, and he's got a good instinct.
Yes. 1,000%. Let me ask you a question, Eric. Have you watched any movies lately or read any books lately? Anything out there that's caught your eye that you want to see?
Yeah, I mean, I watched the two that I've watched recently. Joker, I've seen twice. The writer for Joker, Scott Silver, is a friend of mine. And I know Todd Phillips, the director. So I had to go see that. And it was so amazing that I had to see it again. Saw it twice. And the other one that I saw twice that I really dug is a Quentin Tarantino movie called Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. If you haven't seen it, it's worth checking out because it was a really interesting take on history. You know, something that actually happened with a whole entirely different ending and twist on it.
Yeah.
And really, really, really well done.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw both movies. I liked both of them. Big fan of the Joker, big fan of the scene with Robert De Niro, because that came out of nowhere. What was the ending, Joe, that we were kind of trying to figure out the ending? Do you remember?
Oh, in Joker, whether or not he imagined it all, where at the end he's in there telling his story, but he kind of it was kind of an illusion or whatever. You know.
Do you think at the end he was imagining that or that was happening?
I mean, I the way I took it, it was actually happening.
Right.
Now, I've been reading about a sequel coming out. So right. There may be another Joker movie.
Let me tell you, Eric, something I'm not a big fan of. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
I'm not a big fan of directors who take the cheap way out a la The Sopranos and they say it's up for interpretation. No, 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 no. Don't interpret nothing for me. Give me an ending. I understand what the fuck happened. I don't like movies where I have to, it's up to my, you know what I'm saying? I like
you write the finish.
Right. Give me a finish. You know, like that. I didn't like the ending of The Sopranos, for example, and I can give you some other examples of movies like that.
Yeah, no, Dexter, I think, is famous for that as well. There's a lot of them, unfortunately. But I think that goes back to what we were talking about before. It's paint your picture with big, broad strokes and bright colors so that the audience can get it. And they know what the finish is. They know what the ending is. Don't, like you say, Conan, take the easy way out and leave it vague because you can't come up with a good ending.
Right.
That's a fucking DQ finish all day long.
Yes, 1,000%. Something that just occurred to me as we were speaking, Eric, what is now? What are you looking at doing now? Will you be doing podcasting? Do you think you'll be working for another company? Do you what do you think you'll be doing now?
Well, I'm going to keep the podcast going as long as it's working for everybody, and I enjoy doing it. So that'll probably be in my future for quite a while. I'm resurrecting a couple television projects that I had in development prior to going to WWE. I kind of put them on ice.
How about the old idea that we had hanging off of Scott Baio's single at 46, Disco single at 52?
Just 52.
Okay.
I mean, how interesting. Look, I mean, how interesting is watching what any 52-year-old does?
Right. At the world's largest strip club. That could be interesting.
Yeah, right.
There you go.
Yeah, you know what Disco told me, which is kind of telling? He says, back in the day, after the show, if I went to the locker room and said, hey, who wants to come to Sapphire? That would have been full of the boys. Nowadays, nobody goes. How incredible is that? Like, he went to AEW, went to Vegas. He said none of the boys were there.
Yeah,
right?
None of the fans either. Unbelievable. Like, they're like, bro, the wrestling show's in town, and nobody's going out to the strip clubs after the show. I find that fascinating. I'm like, you know, a target market that you would think, like, okay, all these people are going to be coming to the strip club after the show. Nobody. And just
how wild
weird
is that? Can you imagine the animals that we were in the 90s? I mean, there would have probably been more of the boys in there than the actual clients, you know?
Yeah, I try to put all that out of my mind.
Yeah, right. Things change. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of funny to, you know, that you lived in that era. We lived in that era where everybody, hey, let's go party, strip clubs, all that very wild era, which unfortunately took a lot of our, you know, brothers from us to how it is now. It's very tranquil compared to how we were, you know?
Yeah, it's funny. The last time I went to a strip club, and I can't even remember how long ago it was. It was in Vegas. I remember it must have been 10 years ago, maybe longer.
Yeah.
And I walked in and I looked around and I went, wow, every one of these dancers looked like they could be my daughter's friend.
Right.
And I felt so old and creepy and crusty. I was like, I'm not doing this anymore.
Right. Yeah.
Hey, let me ask you this too. I want to get this out. You told the story on the 83 recent Conrad about the Tony Khan thing and the Madden with the roast and stuff and all that. And I saw Meltzer try to take a shot at you on Twitter, basically saying that, like, you know, trying to call you out saying your story's not accurate. I just want to verify that I heard from the source of this story, what, like, immediately after it happened, your version of the story is correct. Okay.
You know, so it's funny.
We're going to call you did call a lie. When I see you getting called out for lying, I'm like, no, that he's got the right story here. Like, you know, so somebody else owes the apology. You know?
So here's the difference. And I was going to respond to that. Maybe I will at some point tomorrow or the next day when I get a little more time, but here's
when you have trolling time.
Here's the difference between Meltzer and myself. Number one, I'm going to name my source. Meltzer never does. He just says, I have sources. He never names anybody. My source was Mark Madden.
Mine too.
Mark Madden is the one that told me what went down. And by the way, that's not secondhand or third hand or fourth hand, the way Dave relies on information. That was firsthand.
Yeah.
Oh, and here's another difference, Dave. I was in the fucking room. Dave writes about stuff that's happening 1,500 miles. He's not even in the freaking room. And he takes a position that he knows exactly what's going on and you know, puts it out there as news. I was in the freaking room. Mark Madden is the one that told me about the incident. I made it clear when I was talking, I think it was on After 83 Weeks on my YouTube channel. I said, you know, I was standing way in the back of the room. I didn't see any of it go down. I made that very clear. But my source, in the first person, Mark Madden, who was there and involved in it, is the one that relayed the story to me. That's the difference between myself and Dave, is I'll name my sources, and generally I don't talk about things unless I was in the room.
Yeah. Right, and that's the difference between, you know, all these so-called now wrestling experts who I see them sometimes fighting with wrestling. I'm like, hey, motherfucker, you've never even been in the business. You're not backstage. You don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, that's almost like me. I'm a humongous University of Miami football fan, like humongous. I wouldn't go over there and try to tell the coach how to do his job because he's there. He knows the players that come on time, who has an attitude issue, who's injured, who works with, you know what I'm saying? He's there. He's hands on, not me. You know what I'm saying?
No, and I think, you know, that's always been my bitch, you know, with wrestling writers. And I do have to say, and there's a lot of them now that I think are really good. They're actually professional in terms of the way they approach their business. Ryan Satin, I think, does a great job. He's tried to source. He's reached out to me to confirm or deny stories. Even Wade Keller, you know, and Dave Shear and Mike Johnson,
hey,
the guys.
Let me ask you one question right off the bat. Have you heard, and you haven't lived till you have, Wade Keller trying to do promos for WWE?
No.
Can you find one of those, Joe?
Honestly, so Eric, on that Russo show, he does the cash rate of the mark thing. So they'll play clips of Keller cutting promos for guys. So one of the fans superimposed, took the actual interviews of the wrestlers and did it with Wade's voice speaking the promo. It's literally one of the funniest things you've ever seen because the promos are terrible. You know, so it's like Wade, because Wade does not cut good promos for wrestlers. I mean, I don't know if you've heard some of his takes on this, but it's very generic and boring, right? And so there's this guy that posts these videos on Vimeo or whatever it is, just the promos. They're really hysterical, but I'll have Joe send you one. And just like, if you can look, it's really funny. Some of the funniest things I've seen.
Love to.
If you find one, Joe, before Eric gets off so he can hear it, because they're usually short, you'll pop. Eric, while he's finding that, what do you got going on? What do you want to plug? What's going on with you?
Well, I'm just taking a couple months off. I'm hanging down here with my kids for the holidays, and then probably heading back to Wyoming sometime in January, February. I've got some travel coming up, some things that I'm doing. I've got a movie I'm working on with Netflix that'll hopefully start getting
heated up here. What are you writing out of your? What are you doing?
Producing.
Producing. All right. Can you give any details?
No, I better not. It's a Netflix movie. It's I can tell you what's already been put out there. It was in Hollywood Reporter, I think, back in February. It's a Hulk Hogan biopic. Right. Take your pick.
Right.
The director is Todd Phillips. The writer is Scott Silver from Joker.
Oh, really?
Wow. Chris Hemsworth is going to play Hulk Hogan, but beyond what was in that press release, I can't really talk about it.
All right. That's cool. That'll be very interesting. I'm sure very successful. Anything else? 83 weeks. What else?
83 weeks is still going strong. I'm going to talk to Conrad, after the holidays. In fact, I'm going to go up to a Christmas party at the Conradison in December with my wife. And I may talk to him there, but we're actually talking about launching a second podcast, completely different than 83 weeks.
Right.
I don't want to dilute, that property because it's doing really well for us. But I'm exploring perhaps a second podcast. It would be completely different.
I would like to say that Conrad is a jolly old fellow.
He's great. Yeah, he's great.
He plays Santa Claus. I mean, he dresses up as Santa Claus each year, right? I imagine he's got to. He looks like a perfect Santa Claus.
He's a great friend. He's really smart, and I'm grateful to be working with him.
The one thing I was impressed with him is how he just came in and started figuring out ways to make money doing this.
Well, that's what he's really smart about.
He helped. We had a conference call with him and said, "Hey, bro, what are you doing on Patreon? How are you doing this?" It's like, because we're green. Podcasting's. We're greenhorns in this. We just come on and tell the stories of it. But to actually try to make money doing this and make as much as we can, he's the one that set us in the right direction.
Plus, he did a great job with StarCast, and he's always wants to help. He's not one of these guys that, you know what I'm saying? There's some people that help everybody and some guys that don't help anybody, and he wants to help everybody and see everybody do good. So everybody pays it forward to him too. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Did you find that, Joe? Did we waste enough time for you to find that?
Looks like they took the account down again. There's nothing.
Okay. We will send. I will have Joe, because Joe, I think, edits 83 weeks, right, Joe?
Yes.
I will have Joe send it to your email, Eric, so you can check that out and just send us a message if you thought it was funny or not.
Yes,
you got it.
Fine one. Send it.
And I want one more thing, man. I want to thank you very much. I know in the past, you and me always used to clash heads a lot because we're both hard-headed there. But I appreciate you a lot now. As you get older, you know how it is, Eric. You appreciate everything more than when you're younger, and I just appreciated working for you and being with you in WCW.
Thank you for saying that, Conan. I feel the same way. I enjoy talking with you and seeing you and Disco. I like to bust your balls as often as I possibly can because it's such good material. But nothing but respect for you guys. Thank you very much.
Hey, same thing, Eric. Thank you very much for being on Keeping It 100. Boom.
See you, man.
Yeah. All right, be cool.
Peace out, man. Peace. Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Have a good Thanksgiving.
Thank you, man.
Good Thanksgiving. Peace.
All right. So we got, let's do sports.
Okay, give me one second.
What did you think of that interview, Joe? Good.
I think it was great. I think it went
great. He's always great to have on, too.
But it's just very intelligent.
Yeah.
That's appealing. You know, that's
this is the first time we haven't talked to him about politics, too.